All right, everyone. I know it's a small group, but that increases your chances for the raffle. So I think that's a positive. Let's get started, nevertheless. It's a shame that we have to close. I could do it for another few days, definitely. But this is our closing session, so welcome. It's time to close the Austrian Forum for Peace 2025, to reflect on what we've learned, on what we've talked about, to summarize the takeaways, and also to share a little bit our commitments with each other so that we can end on a note of clarity, of connection, of momentum that we can take with us to inspire action, hopefully also over the next year of our work. So after this session ends at around 11, maybe a little bit earlier, we have a jazz brunch prepared for you in the beautiful castle courtyard one last time. That will end around 12:30, and then I do ask you to grab your luggage, make your way to the transfer back to Vienna if you're booked on that, because the transfer will be leaving at 1 sharp in front of the hotel, with or without you on it, but we would prefer to have you on it, so 1 p.m. Yeah, but first, let's kick off the recap. And to start us off, Bernadette Holzer will be giving us an overview of the topics discussed in the workshop. So please give her a warm welcome.
Good morning. Gotta say, I cannot agree with Damita. I couldn't do it for many more days. Even though everything has been inspiring, it also has been exhausting. Excellencies, distinguished speakers, dear colleagues and friends who have made their way also on this third day to our granarium in the Austrian Peace Castle, a structure designed for war, now dedicated to peace. Most of you have met me and conversed with me. I was in charge of this year's AFP, which was a pleasure, I guess. But I'm not the key person with whom this forum stands or falls. All of you have been in contact with Claudia Hofer, who indeed is the beating heart behind this conference, without whom this conference couldn't have happened. Please join me in a round of applause for Claudia. Who I'm afraid will not have heard this, because she is certainly somewhere jumping on one or the other fire that always pops up. And the rest of the AFP team. Tina Gangoli-Madl. Mercedes Corrales. Alba Losert and Caitlin Roche. And now I thank you for breathing life into this third Austrian Forum for Peace these past days. Your presence proves that when peace is in crisis, it is also at a turning point. Imagination and debate can reshape it. In the following minutes, allow me to recap the road we have traveled since Monday. We opened under the banner Peace in Crisis, Challenges and Opportunities for a World in Transition. From the first keynote, Professor Yair Hirschfeld reminded us that seemingly intractable conflicts can produce the architecture for dialogue, provided we keep channels open and empathy intact. In the Transatlantic Drift panel, we asked, who will lead on peace and human security? It was argued that the shocks on the EU borders and the political tremors inside oblige Europe to act as a deliberate architect of peace. It was also contended that any retreat into state-centric reflexes will fall short. New thinking must place global gender, historical, ecological, and racial justice at the core. Recent US behavior has eroded trust, risking a slide from dependable security provider to conflict enabler. The debate converged on one conclusion. Peace leadership must shift from power politics to people-centered coalitions, because the absence of violence is only the floor, not the ceiling, of the peace we seek. In a lively and insightful discussion, technologists, diplomats, and peacekeepers mapped the information front lines at the panel Peace in the Age of Disinformation, Rebuilding Trust in a Fractured World. We learned that counter-narratives alone are insufficient. Instead, Digital literacy, algorithmic accountability, and locally trusted messengers must intersect if we are to immunize societies against manipulation. The discussion was further framed by the screening of the movie How to Build a Truth Engine in the evening, where many people of the local population also joined us, what made me personally particularly happy. The public panel... No, the joining of the local population, that made me happy. You were intimidated by the Schleining people. The public panel, Europe Without Washington, New Strategies for Dealing with Russia, surveyed Europe's security options after diminishing of US leadership. Speakers highlighted that avenues for exchange and dialogue must be kept open and argued that protecting Europe's population, values, institution, and territory must remain the guiding yardstick. Despite being intended as a peace policy stocktake, the panel's louder voices pushed the conversation towards a war policy stocktake. An imbalance that matters. While it is certainly legitimate to prepare for security risks, we should remember that every euro used this way is a euro not invested in health, in education, in social cohesion, ultimately endangering the positive peace we envisage for the European Union. While the plenaries gave us the wide-angle lens, the 9 workshops zoomed in, handing us practical tools and revealing the full breadth of ACP's work, from capacity building and peace education to tech innovation and conflict transformation. In Lively Books, participants talked to experts as living books, listening to stories of resistance, reconciliation, and daily courage. The main takeaway of this library of people is that the process of peace building must be anchored towards the oppressed and those denied of human rights. Who, they ask us, really benefits from our efforts? The question powered the Comprehensive Protection of Civilians review. The team is rewriting next year's scenario to cover cyber-enabled and hybrid cases, merging UN, EU, and NATO guidance, and building a ready roster of specialists, because protection only matters when it reaches real people in real time. People stayed at the center in the Restoration as a Conflict Case workshop. Facilitators showed that EU-NATO restoration succeeds only when data are shared from day one. The choice is stark: courage to be transparent or the safety of silence. In the blueprint, Austria's peace tech version, participants agreed Austria can be a peace tech hub, but only if the tech tells a human story. Rooted in digital humanism, collaboration, and tangible ground-level results. Grassroots energy also drove cross-border cooperation in the African Sahel workshop. Women's networks and youth groups are still stitching trust across borders despite insecurity. Yet, one hard question lingers. Can elections be called democratic if elites depend on vigilante groups to mobilize the vote? The workshop, Perspectives on the Future of Israeli-Palestinian Dialogue, showed that grassroots initiatives can keep channels open even when official politics stalls. It further highlights that conversations have to be searched also with hardliners, not just preaching to the converted. To pass insights forward, the peace education workshops catch the follow-up peer review retreat for early 2026. Veteran educators will bring one project each, open it to critique, and leave with sharper methods and a stronger network, highlighting that peace education is not only for kids. To quote Kofi Annan, "Education is quite simply peace building by another name. It is the most effective form of defense spending there is." Master students of the MA Peace and Life Skills Pedagogy spend an intensive session sampling the field's core methods. After a theoretical tour, they moved straight into role plays and simulations, testing each technique in a safe space. The takeaway? Conflict skills are muscle memory. You only keep what you practice. And, last but not least, the Climate, Peace and Security in West Africa Summer School tackled the knot linking drought, displacement and power. Participants traced how climate shocks and colonial legacies weave one risk web, then hit two shortages, funding and time. Their parting challenge to us, with so many fires burning, which one do we fight first? Taken together, the workshops move from personal stories to policy, technology, regional action, and climate risk, then loop back to the human story, reminding us at every turn that real people, not institutions, have the most to gain or lose. For me personally, everything we've debated over these days crystallizes into five central commitments. And I'm actually very keen which you find on the panel and then in the interaction, which you will emphasize or add or challenge. First, to center the people who live the conflict, to put human security first and let the most affected communities lead the process. Second, to root multilateralism where legitimacy lives, empower regions, cities, women's and youth networks to steer initiatives from the ground up. Third, build a trust infrastructure on and offline. Pair civic education with accountable technology to outpace disinformation. Fourth, make every peace effort climate smart. Treat adaptation and resilience funding as frontline conflict prevention. Five, keep the conversation open, even with adversaries. Safeguard dialogue channels today while designing the post-war future. My dear fellow AFP participants, ladies and gentlemen, dear friends, today's public discourse can make it seem as if peace is out of fashion, and those of us who speak for it are dismissed as naive. Yet, history tells a different story. After major crises, bold new ideas have taken shape. The League of Nations, the United Nations, the European Union, flawed as they might seem. The next bold design for peace is waiting to be sketched. And we must start drafting this now. So thank you for helping to filling those pages during the AFP.
Thank you so much, Bernadette, for giving us an insight into the workshops. And now for further reflection, for further takeaways from the forum, I'd like to invite on stage three external contributors who will also help us sum up this year's main themes, main challenges. I'll present them in more detail in a minute, but I will just call them on stage now, and I ask you to give them a round of applause. Nancy Anan, Christian Strohal, and Ertuğrul Apakan.
This is what ambassadors do best.
Up to you, I think. So I'm not sure the panelists need an introduction, but I will give them a brief one. Anyway, Ambassador Apakan is a seasoned Turkish diplomat, a member of the ACP Advisory Board, former permanent representative of Turkey to the UN. Nancy Anan is a research fellow at the Center for Trust, Peace, and Social Relations at Coventry University, focusing on peace and security in Africa. And Ambassador Strohal is a seasoned Austrian diplomat, former permanent representative to the UN, the OSCE, and now the chair of the ACP Advisory Board. So I only have two questions for each of you, and I'll ask the panelists first, and then I'll hand over the floor to the audience as well in case you want to add to those questions. And Ambassador Apakan, maybe I'll start with you. With the first question, which is, for you, what were the key points that have emerged for you in the course of this forum, the key takeaways?
I have to say that the quality of the debate was interesting, inspiring. I think ACP did a good job. And the topics were very timely and relevant. And there were, in the workshops, some interesting discussions for the future. For example, Israel-Palestine issue was discussed at the grassroots level in an intellectual format. It was inspiring for the future. And really, I'm impressed by the discussion. I took part in a workshop where I met Schleining and Burgenland, colleagues, and some teachers. We did have an exchange. I understand the role of civil society over there once again. The debate on trust building, the truth, disinformation, and truth engine, they were all eye-opener. I have to say that I'm following, to some extent, from some distance, the developments in the UN. In 2023, the UN Secretary General submitted a new peace agenda. That's the second one on the part of the UN. In 1990, Boutros Ghali also made a peace agenda, a new peace agenda. It was just after Perestroika, and Boutros Ghali's one may be more comprehensive. It also opened a new chapter with UN-Africa relationship. And I should say that I'm happy to meet our African colleagues here. Their debate on West Africa, climate change, and water resources, they are all very relevant topics, and they are very pertinent. UN in UN General Assembly in 2024 adopted the Pact for the Future. And the focus was on prevention and peace building. And the UN Secretary General again submitted a report, peace building report. What I'm trying to say, the debate and the discussions are very relevant to the topics promoted by the UN. And very recently, I read the ZIP report, 5 Trends in Peace Operations, and Annika, one of the authors, are here. I should say that our debate here is very much focused also in the international context. Maybe this is the right English?
Yes.
I gave my message, okay. People need peace. When together with the Austria, the Security Council, the number of the armed conflicts were 31. Now, according to PLIO, it's 59. And according to UN and ZIF reports, nearly 2 million people are living in disputed areas, conflict-affected areas. 2 billion. 2 billion. Nearly even, you know, one-third of our world population. It's interesting. This is a question which we should raise. The reason is there is an increasing connectivity. But according to an Oxford report, it says the bigger population, the wider population, world population, is getting marginalized at the same time. Marginalized. People are not aware of what's going on in international relations. This is one of the contradictions ever increasing during the last 30, 40 years' time. And the number of these contradictions has to be dealt with institutions, NGOs. And in that context, I have to say that ACP is building a file on peace education, peace culture and peace discipline. That's what the people are looking for. And protection of civilians. I do remember, I took part 10 years ago when we were a member of the Security Council in ALPA, arranged by Austria. The main focus was the protection of the civilians. Again, to see protection of civilian population here is interesting, because people need care, people need peace, and people need some humanitarian relief. We have nearly, according to reports, nearly 300 million people are looking for humanitarian assistance. Nearly 117 people forcibly displaced. So we have to care for the people, and it should be people-to-people relationship, and peace should be centered at the people. And one thing I would like to say during these discussions, the sequencing of the steps of the peace process is also critically important. We have to think about it. To the extent we think about the people, trust issue will be removed incrementally. Of course, there is income inequalities, other issues. I shall stop here. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I think that was a very broad and concise overview of a lot of issues that were covered during the forum. Nancy, what stood out to you? What are your key points that you're taking away?
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here and to be part of this panel. And this is my first time at a forum, so it's been engaging and insightful, and I've enjoyed it very much. So to your question, over the past couple of days, I think a couple of things stood out for me. And I think the first thing, which I think the first speaker also alluded to, is the power of dialogue and listening. And I think that came out throughout the conversation, how important it is for us to listen to each other, dialogue, and talk to each other. And I think that in the keynote speaker, Professor Yair Hirschfeld, he talked about don't just speak, but listen. So because sometimes all we want to do is talk, and in that process, we fail to listen. And as I was reflecting on this, and you do realize that dialogue and listening are both conscious actions. So it's a conscious action. It takes a conscious effort from both parties to open up their minds, to listen to each other, and to understand each other and respect each other's needs, experiences, and perspectives. And that is not always easy. Dialogue and listening don't always start from the position of comfort. It can be very uncomfortable, and it can be vulnerable, and sometimes with even some creative tensions that can go on, and that's okay, because once we manage to sit through that discomfort and also learn to understand each other, it takes us to the place where we become mutually empowered towards collective cause and sustainable solutions. And so I think that is very important, and it's one thing that stood out for me. And another is around the future of democracy. And I think that when we talk about democracy in reversal, or the whole discussion around democratic backsliding, I think it came out very well, including in our workshops, right, where we talked about this whole new concept of third-termism that is ongoing in a lot of African countries, where you have incumbents circumvent or abolish constitutional term limits in order to stay on in power, which we have seen in Cote d'Ivoire, we have seen in Guinea, we have seen in Rwanda, Uganda, and this is really causing a lot of challenges. And we also talked about the resurgence of coup d'etats in the Sahel and other places, which, increasing conflict and terrorism activities and undermining democracy. And this also ties into the conversation around disinformation that we had yesterday, right, which is equally spreading not only in Africa but in other parts of the world. And in Africa, for instance, campaigns led by external actors, including Russia, China, and others, are really sowing seeds of confusion and instigating violence and undermining democracy. And one of the key solutions that came up in our conversations was education, and I think the first speaker has also alluded to that, providing free and comprehensive education to young people that will equip them with skills and in the process enhance their employability so that they don't fall prey to extremist groups or even this whole disinformation that is going on. But equally important is the role of peace education, where we integrate peace values and skills into the educational curriculum from basic level to the tertiary level, so that we shape and transform the minds of young people to become positive agents of change within their community. And this is something that my colleagues and I have worked on through funding from the British Council, where we worked with universities in Ethiopia, in Sudan, to integrate peace education into the university curriculum. So it's something very important. And another interesting thing that came from the discussions that we had was the intergenerational transfer of knowledge and peace practices. And I think this is very important. Incredible work on peace and security is going on across different continents, across different levels. But if we do not transfer this knowledge, if you don't collate this knowledge and transfer them into younger generation, they can be lost along the way. So how do we ensure that all these peace and peace practices and approaches, including the indigenous approaches that exist in a lot of countries, can be sustained through generations? And that is why, for me, I also think that youth and young people are core to this discussion and must be in the room. And another thing that we also discussed, it was the climate impact, climate change and its impact, and the importance of finding coordinating solutions to these issues, because we know the rising temperatures, lack of accessibility to water, food scarcity are really contributing factors to conflict and other security challenges that we've discussed. I mean, records shows that over 2.3 billion people have experienced moderate or severe food insecurity, and these figures are rising because or due to climate change and its impact. So it's something that we cannot ignore. And one interesting thing that came out of it in our discussion was the fact that we are in the era of polycrisis, right, where everything is connected to everything. All the issues, the challenges that we are facing are connected. Hence, it requires poly solutions in dealing with them. And I also like the idea, the discussions or that came out around, you know, the role of youth and women, because I think that they play very instrumental role, both at the grassroots level, national and international. And I think that it is important that these roles are recognized, because they are not just victims of conflict and its insecurities, but they also have agency. And I think that is great. And this year, marking the 25th anniversary of UN Resolution 1325, it's only appropriate that we identify and we highlight some of these instrumental or great strides that have been made, even though there are some challenges as well. So I'll end here. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So we heard listening to each other, we heard fighting disinformation, democratic backsliding through education, and we also heard about how important it is to understand the interconnectedness of today's crises. Ambassador Strohal, what were your key takeaways? What would you add to all of that?
Well, what can I add to two excellent resumes? I think I would start with the obvious, and we have had in the last 3 days a reality check and also identified responses to reality. And so my starting point is that in times of unprecedented upheaval, it may have become more difficult to talk about peace, but at the same time it is more necessary than ever to talk about peace, and not only about sort of responding to violence or defending against violence. The reality check, if I think back 2 years at the first forum, we were we started from the then new war of aggression of Russia against its neighbor. 2 years later, that war is still ravaging, and as we have heard, it's not only against Ukraine, but in a hybrid form against Europe and the whole political and social model which is represented in Europe. But at the same time, there are more conflicts, more violent conflicts, which have come up. So, in a way, it's not only in the Middle East. So the sort of the presence of conflict throughout the world is really sort of very much on everybody's mind in terms of not sort of what can I do. Also, look at what is going on. But we also heard about other challenges, the new American administration and everything which comes from that, and the fact that as a consequence we cannot take anything for granted any longer as in the last decades, including security for Europe and the rest of the world, sort of security provided or not provided by the United States of America. At the same time, we also heard that in today's global village, a conflict, a violent conflict at the local level can very quickly impact on the regional and global levels as well. So local is global, and global is local. At the same time, the global multilateral order is under strain, under threat, people sort of losing trust in its capacities, and conveniently forgetting that it is not the UN to blame if we blame the global order, but the member states in the UN who are the owners. So the question is also how to expand ownership in that global order, to go beyond the usual representations, to look at cities, to look at grassroots level, look at civil society organizations, to strengthen ownership for the global system, as it were. We also heard about the acceleration of developments in the technological field, particularly with regard to information, disinformation, artificial intelligence, the power of intransparent algorithms, and the effect this has on everybody's everyday lives, and how to develop a need for awareness, for literacy, and for concrete, including regulatory responses in this field. As Ambassador Apakan referred to UN reports, I would want to add one more, which is also responding to the fact that everything is connected with everything, the interconnectedness. Also necessitating a comprehensive approach to responses. And Kofi Annan had a report in 2005, I think, called Enlarge Freedom, with a very clear and simple message, which essentially said development and security are sort of conditioning each other. There is no development without security, and there is no security without development. And neither of the two can be achieved without human rights, without an effective protection of human rights. And that I think is as relevant as it has been 20 years ago. And we have heard about social justice in our panels. I would also add environmental and climate justice as key factors in such a comprehensive approach.
Thank you so much. So really, you know, reality check. You mentioned that we are still living in challenging circumstances, and that requires a really multilateral approach to solutions. Thank you so much to all three of you for summarizing and synthesizing your takeaways. I'd like to hand over to the audience. Is there anything that you feel wasn't mentioned, or that you feel you would like to add, or that you would like to expand on, challenge, give a different perspective on? Bettina. I do think we have a microphone somewhere.
So thank you very much for the wonderful panel.
It's also for the people upstairs. This is why, yeah.
Yeah, hello. So thank you for wrapping it up so wisely and concisely. In our own countries, so we have the first days of absolute boiling heat, but of course, for example, in my own country, Germany, the climate issues have kind of disappeared. They're not popular anymore. They have been labeled at a time when it is so patently clear that we will all boil together. There is no labeling, and I wonder what we can do to change this and make the real issues again real issues for everybody in humanity. And for many of our African colleagues and friends, the reality is an even much harsher one when the herders don't find water anymore and grazing for their animals.
Thank you. There's another intervention here.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the summary. Well summarized. I think all the point has been raised as from my side. Maybe only one point is really appreciate of having the opportunity of attending this very interesting exchange dialogue, but also listening, because from our small workshop, I think we spend 3 days together, but it is like we have been together for the last 10 years. my point here is I have been here, this is my third time. I came for two trainings that I really appreciated. I work for the UN, OCHA, the Office of Coordination, Humanitarian Coordination, actually based in Mozambique, but I spent many years in West Africa. That's why I came to listen to what is going on. I think my only point here is a recommendation to the organizer that from our group, it has been raised that, yeah, we are talking about West Africa from Austria, but our point was to see if it can there will be a way to have a follow-up and continues this dialogue. We committed also to have a follow-up online for our small group, but the key point was to see, to suggest to have a follow-up discussion in West Africa on ground, so that we can also have local affected the local community representative, as Her Excellency Ambassador just raised the issue of water, but we have also the conflict. And as I said from the first day, morning observation was that so that we can be with the people who knows and who are looking for peace, because they are the one really affected and they need peace now, not tomorrow or after tomorrow. So that was our point to the organizer. If for West Africa we can have your support to have a follow-up discussion. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That ties nicely into what we're going to discuss next, which is where do we go from here? I think we have one more intervention at the front here, two actually.
First of all, thank you very much for the panel, but also for the entire setup. For us coming from Israel, a better understanding of what is happening outside has been extremely important. And we are happy that we had the duty, but also the pleasure to listen. For me, the most interesting session of listening was the one on how to deal with the Russian threat. And there was a clear gap between the speakers and the audience. The speakers understood that peace has to build by deterrence and security activities, and the audience thought that peace is only love each other. And I believe you have the duty to get away from the sense that peace is only cannot only be done by speaking. We have to listen, we have to speak, but we need some kind of security and deterrence that goes far beyond military things, it goes beyond many other things. I regret very much that something happened that I would have loved to happen, but was physically not possible, to be in the sessions on Africa. Because I believe that the sessions on Africa are part of a wide understanding, and if there any way, I would love to be somehow included in a later thing. Thank you.
Thank you so much. If you pass the microphone on right behind you, there's Annika who has...
And actually, my comment fits well with what you were saying, because I think, I too would have loved to have been in the Africa, I would have loved to have been in all of these sessions. I also appreciate the summaries that helped me understand more. But I think we also have to recognize that we have one global humanity and we have global issues like climate and so on, but we also have some very distinct perspectives. For instance, the Europeans' perspective on the war in Ukraine and the very real fear that Europe has and has had to face in the last years that we didn't think we would have to face since the end of the Cold War. But we also have to recognize that's our perspective and that's not necessarily something that is very present in Africa. And so to try and keep, I always say there's more than one thing can be true at the same time, and we keep sort of and what you hear, yeah, you were just saying about sort of the discrepancy between the panel and the audience. Both sides are right, you know, and we have to be able to keep more than one thought in our heads at the same time, and both be able to defend ourselves or recognize that Europe has some homework to do, but also work for peace and try and put peace first. So I, especially given the film that we also saw yesterday about disinformation and the polarization in society where we keep seeing we have to be on one side or we have to be on the other side, the truth is in the middle, and we have to see how we find that space in the middle to really promote peace and education and so on. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I think in the interest of time, if there are no more burning additions or anyone who feels they really want to add to that, I would move on to the second question, which I believe the gentleman with the hat hinted at, which is, where do we go from here? What do we do with all of this? So given everything we talked about and summarized, what can we take home to inform our work over the next year?
Well, again, I wish to congratulate our director, our chair of the advisory board, and the members of the ACP for getting us together here. We have the professor, EU colleagues, ambassadors, another ambassador here, and students, distinguished representative of a UK think tank and institution, young lady. I think this is somewhat this solidarity of generations. That's what we are experiencing from also different regions. And dear Tobias, thank you again to you and to your friends. Well, since I thought that I will be speaking in front of very distinguished international students, I look at my notes. There is Julian Bagani, maybe I'm not pronouncing it well, his book about a short history of truth. And a small paragraph from this book, it says, most of us still value what the late Bernard Williams identified as the key virtues of truth. Key virtues of truth, sincerity and accuracy. This is what Julian Bagani is saying for the future. I read this book. It's really a small one, a useful one. Another, maybe what I felt, what we've experienced in the talks on Ukraine in the past, I should say that I was sometimes saying empathy, and we did have a psychologist then, he warned me and he said, it is better you use the mindfulness instead of empathy, mindfulness. They also promoted the concept, now turning to the students, I am still working on those concepts. One is humility and the other one is civility for the negotiations. I think we need these concepts for future negotiations. That's what I would like to say. Secondly, there are also some serious gaps in the mediation of ceasefire arrangements still. Every day we are experiencing a complex warfare, and the ceasefire arrangements are also getting somewhat, has to be articulated more, and we have to learn more from each other and from different experiences. And ceasefire, yesterday I tried to make during my intervention, is very much related to accountability, verification and facts. So the combination of technology and human sources have to be well planned and well taught. And the ceasefire, after long war, years of war and long distances, it really needs some type of architecture. And particularly for Ukraine, it's going to be the security of Europe also. So it has to be taught in a wider scope. That's for the future, I'm saying. I think together with OSCE or some other institutions, this could be an interesting topic for, I mean, ceasefire architecture for the future, not only for Ukraine. I think even the UN needs some advice. They are also thinking about more with peace operations. The structures of the peace operations are changing. That's what I would like to say. And what I would like to say in the meantime, for example, in Ukraine, in the area related to the contact line, there were 700,000 people were living, and some of them were children, some of them elderly people. So to take care of these people is critically important. And the first victims of the warfare are the civilians. That's the reason I'm repeatedly saying, because during my term there, I felt that it is sometimes difficult to reach them. That's the reason I'm saying civilian populations. Another point which I wish to say is mediation. I studied yesterday, and I read it before, the documents prepared by ACP on mediation, European mediation, also emerging countries. And these are useful studies. And I feel that this organization, ACP, could continue to contribute to the process of mediation. But the mediation has to be backed up also by diplomacy and, to some extent, international law. So mediation is a product of a good diplomacy and good and the practice of humanitarian law, of international law. I think those two are no longer has a central role in the international relations. I think the institutions like ACP could promote these concepts again. We need it for Pacific settlements of the disputes. And in that sense, our colleague made it very clear that we have to be good listeners, have to be a good listener. And in the peace operations, it's also important how to be present there. You have to be present there. Without being present there, you cannot make an objective judgment. And facts matters. And one thing I should say, there are, I think it's a French proverb, there is always two shores of the reality. That's the reason we should not forget it and try to find, to establish the facts on the basis of verified inputs. I should stop here. Thank you again.
Thank you so much. So staying humble, staying mindful, listening to each other, focusing on real-world outcomes like ceasefires and the people affected. Nancy, how about your thoughts on, you know, how we go from here, how we go forward, what can we take home?
Thank you. I think some of the things I will say are connected to what Ambassador Akapani has also mentioned. But I'll first of all say that I think that we continue to create these dialogic spaces, such as these, because it brings different actors together to interact and to dialogue, because oftentimes we do things in silos. And when we do things in silos, it hampers coordination and collaboration. So I think the continuous creation of these dialogic spaces, as has been done through the AFP, is it Austrian Forum for Peace, is very important. And I'll also say that we continue to create more opportunities and avenues for genuine partnerships. And I think this is something that came up in also our conversations, genuine partnerships and relationships, be it horizontal or vertical. So whether it's between and among multilaterals or between internationals, locals, and national governments, I think that it on the ground, I think it is important. So we need to move away from the top-down approaches to a more bottom-up approach where we again listen and integrate needs and agency of those on the ground. And I think that here a consultative process which is based on trust, mutual respect and recognition of unique contributions of every actor, every stakeholder, it's important and essential for building this genuine partnership. And I think that we should also continue with advocacy or advocate for ethical standards and use of AI. AI is here to stay, and whether we like it or not, and if we don't put in place ethical standards, it's going to impact our lives quite negatively. And so we need to push governments and big tech companies and regional bodies to adopt and enforce ethical frameworks around the creation and use of AI. And it's great to see that in 2024, both the EU and the African Union adopted AI frameworks, such as the EU AI Act, and then the Continental Artificial Intelligence Strategy by the AU, African Union, to promote ethical, responsible, and equitable AI practices across the continent. This is a good start, but it doesn't have to stop there. There's a need to enforce these laws, and I think that is very important. And yesterday, picking back on what Branka Panic talked about, ethics by design, okay, where we create the creators of apps and AIs takes into consideration the ethical standard right at the design stage. And I think that is important. And this will only be possible if we have ethical frameworks in place to enforce these processes. Additionally, I think research into the use of AI is also very important, and I think that academics and other researchers can lead and share findings with policy makers to ensure to inform and shape policy and programs around the use of AI. And again, continuation of advocacy and other initiatives at the local level by civil society and other actors is equally very important, especially around disinformation. And we heard about the Lithuanian elves, which I think, you know, involving children, young people in changing mindset around disinformation. I think these initiatives on the ground are very, very useful and should be continued. Over the year, you know, across board. And finally, I think that I'll make reference to the new agenda for peace, which Ambassador Akapani also mentioned, which highlights, you know, focuses on collective security, emphasizing that global threats can only be resolved if member states move beyond competition and find cooperation and collective action, right? And this focuses on three principles, which I think is key for the work that we do, but also for our everyday. The first is on trust. Trust, which is the cornerstone of interventions. And this can be built through, you know, dialogues, confidence building, and cooperation, which I think we have emphasized over the last few days. The second is on solidarity, the need to, you know, to have a sense of fellowship and collective duty to address injustices and assist those in need. And finally, around universality, where state and people come together to tackle global threat, meaning leaving no one behind. Everybody matters in this process. And so I believe that these principles are important, and we should continue to inculcate them, integrate them into our work and everyday life over the next year or so or more, and continue to engineer a collective action towards addressing global security, built on our common humanity, the things that bind us rather than the things that divide us. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So the big overarching theme that I really got from that was continuation of cooperation, talking to each other, cooperating both at the level of, you know, stakeholders, institutions, but also at state level, international level. Yeah, thank you so much. Ambassador Strohheil, would you like to add to that?
Well, I think both of you said something very important, which is building trust. How do we get there in a distrustful world? We were reminded in one of the panels, stop pretending that the world is different from what it in fact is. I would add we don't have the luxury of either indifference or despair. We only have the luxury of engagement. And that is possible for everybody. Everybody can make a difference at various levels. And for building trust, certainly listening and engaging and dialoguing is important, but I think the search for truth is certainly a key factor in this world of disinformation, of propaganda, of mutual recriminations. And the movie was very strong on the challenges we are facing and the challenges which are getting in a way bigger and worse as we speak. So what I would also add is that in order to build trust, that also includes build trust into our institutions at all levels, And part of that is accountability. If people get away with murder and there is no accountability, then trust is a first victim. And building accountability mechanisms at all levels is possible and has happened. And we should not lose this out of sight, that this is a key factor in developing, if not trust, then confidence, at least. And maybe simply to say that having come to this forum is already sort of having gone half the way. So as we move away to sort of the second half of the itinerary, this is a work for the ACP to bring all these strands of the last 3 days together. As they start thinking about next year's forum, also taking into account what have been suggestions. I think the idea of looking at a ceasefire architecture. I think ceasefire, I mean, you have negotiated micro ceasefires in your 5 years in Ukraine quasi on a daily basis. But if you look at larger ceasefires, it gets very quickly very complex. And this is not yet peace. We just talk a precondition for building peace. To do this also in a framework where we are reminded that international law is there to protect us and not to endanger us, and that international law at the moment is not having a home run, let's put it that way, is maybe in the year where we have the 80th anniversary of the United Nations a good reminder that if law is violated, it doesn't mean that the law is bad. So to look at building peace in the broad context of working from bottom up, but maintaining the overall framework which has served us well over the last decades. And finally, I can only agree very much that engaging with youth and bringing the sort of engaging with youth and engaging youth, this is two sides of the same coin, is a crucial factor in doing this. This is, I think, being done well here, but maybe this is also something where we can further develop a broader ownership of this forum.
Thank you so much. So I think very important point there about, there is no trust without accountability. Thank you for paving or showing us a possible way forward. I'd like to hand over to the audience one last time for additional comments, interventions, thoughts on, how do we take all of this, these thoughts and suggestions and ideas that we came up with over the last 3 days, everything we discussed, and how do we move forward from here? It's also fine if you want to chat about it over brunch. And I think, I mean, we had such an extensive range of ideas here that maybe there's simply nothing to add. Maybe you'd prefer to have a chat over brunch, which is also fine. Great. Thank you so much. Let's have a round of applause for our speakers. So I think one final order of business before we fully close, and of course you're in a very privileged position here because not that many people who joined the forum are joining the closing session, which means that your chances of winning the raffle are all the bigger. So let's see, I think Benedette, you have the tickets, and I think you also have the prizes that maybe we can show off. Thank you so much. So we have this beautiful print of the crane, the peace crane, reinterpreted by Nathan Coyle, who is not here, but sends his regard as regards through the works of art. And we have two books as well, one co-authored by Branka Panic, who was here on the disinformation panel yesterday, and one on open data for good, written by Nathan Coyle. So those are the stakes. And then now let's see. From experience last year, I will draw three numbers because otherwise it's going to take forever. So do we have number 7, 8, or 16, or 19 in the room? Awesome. 8, we have 8 here. 19, 7. So 8, 19, 7. And then I also have 17, 16, and 9. 17, 16, and 9. Nope, I also have number 18 here. Number 18, we have 4 winners. Great, please come downstairs. Was? Doch, achso, die Bücher sind ein Preis. So, I'm just being told that we're raffling off the book separately, so we do have one final prize. Do we have number 5 or 6 in the room? Number 6, brilliant, please come up here. Perfect, and that's the raffle. So please, would you join us on stage, everyone who has, so we have 6, 18, 8, 19, and 7. Please join us for a picture and to collect your prize. So I believe the first number I called out was 7. What were the first numbers I called out? Who was the first to win? 8 and 7, I believe, were the first ones. So I think you get your pick of book, whichever book you prefer.
Yes, this one.
This one, perfect. So that's AI for peace. And then we have number 7 here. So this is yours. And then everyone else can grab one of the art prints. Please join us for a picture. Thank you so much. Wonderful. That was a lot quicker than I expected. Thank you so much for your help, Bernadette, as well. A few very brief final reminders before I hand over to Tobias Lang for the final closing. So as I said, when we finish, please don't forget your luggage, wherever it is. Please, grab it before you make your way to the transfer at 1. So please also be on time for that. And that was it. It's been an absolute pleasure to host you one more time. Once again, I hope to see you next year. Wish you a safe trip home. And with that, handing over to Tobias Lang. Thank you and goodbye.
Thank you very much. I'll keep myself very brief. Excellencies, colleagues, dear friends, thank you very much for lending these very old halls their heartbeat over the last days. And also thank you very much to Bernadette and the whole team. It wouldn't have been possible without you. Thanks a lot. We had 40 sessions over the last days. I think it became clear we had one shared conviction that peace is everybody's business here. However, our promises do not end with the jazz brunch afterwards. The Austrian Center for Peace will try to turn and will work to turn your pledges into praxis, for example, through the next workshops and courses we have and trainings, where registration is still open, which are recovery and stabilization in September, protection of civilians in November, and environmental peace building also in November. Applications are still open. Now please join us in the courtyard for good music and most importantly some networking without any schedule you need to take care of. And please mark in your calendars exactly 1 year ahead on June 30 until the 3rd of July 2019. 2026, we will keep the Austrian Forum for Peace right here, same time, same space, same place. Hope to see you again next year, and please enjoy the brunch. Thank you very much for attending and participating.